Mike and David continue down the west side corridor as the band and crowd roar on the floor far below. At the first door, David says, "This is it." He opens the door and they enter another large apartment. "If you want to wash up, go ahead. Sorry, I don't have a key. We don't use them much up here. Not a lot of public access. The elevator has closed-circuit cameras and nobody gets up here without being observed and allowed to. When you're ready, come back over to my place." "Okay, but first, I told you my story. What's yours? Why are you in Omaha running a bar with a lot of spy cams and wireless mics?" "Okay, sit down, I'll explain. So yeah, I was in med school down in St. Louis. Did pretty well. Nearly finished. So what happened? Change in priorities." "What do you mean?" "I met this grad student my first year in a class I was taking on medical records. His name was Stan Jones. He was doing a doctorate in computer science and wanted to get into medical records software with a built-in artificial intelligence backbone so it could be used to spot diseases, run treatment protocols, that sort of thing. I got interested too. We started our own company, internet-based medical records with billing, insurance claim adjustments, and a really insane AI engine. It made big improvements in patient outcomes. The insurance companies loved it. After a couple of years, we sold out to a consortium of insurance companies. So, by the age of 25, I quit medical school and was seriously rich. I stayed on in St. Louis after the buyout, had a big penthouse on Lindell Boulevard. Anyway, Stan decided to get into local politics. He started a crusade to crack down on organized crime. That was going to be his give back. Politics wasn't my thing, but I agreed to help him. It wasn't long before he and I were on the wrong side of a lot of influential people. So, long story short, one night, some of their thugs ambushed Stan in a parking garage downtown after a meeting he'd been at. I was supposed to be there, too, but something came up at the last minute. He was the last to leave. In the empty garage, out of sight of any witnesses, he was attacked from behind. They stuffed his body into the back of an SUV. They took his body out to a secluded wooded area near Portage du Sault along the Missouri River before it joins the Mississippi. They hacked the body to pieces, arms, leg, head, pretty grim stuff, then dug a shallow grave, buried him, and piled rocks to keep the spring floods from uncovering the corpse. Then one day, an old Mexican farm laborer appeared like a ghost on KMOX TV. In broken English, he said that he had seen some guys bury a body out near the Alton Dam. They ID'd the corpse a few days later. It was Stan. I guess I panicked. I figured since I worked pretty close with him on his projects, I might be next. I didn't put much trust in the St. Louis legal system. I put up some bullshit story that I was going around the world on a cruise. Instead, I loaded up the Jag and headed west. A few manipulations of some bank records and some fake credit card transactions, and as far as anybody could tell, I was in the high and surly seas. Why, Omaha? I knew a few people out here from my former company. You know, Venny, VD Velcro. I came, I saw, I stuck around. Seemed as good a place as any at the time. Now I'm sort of attached to the place. Did they ever catch you murdered Stan? Nope, the police never got anywhere. I don't think they were really too interested anyway. So, you decided to stay here? Yeah, path of least resistance. I kind of like it, though. I bought this old warehouse. Someone had it renovated into an office building with the big central atrium a few years back. They went belly up and I bought it and converted it into what you see now. I always wanted to own a bar, you know. But it's a cop-out. I should have stayed in St. Louis and fought back. I wish I did, but I didn't. So besides living upstairs from a saloon, now, explain what's all this security stuff. This place is a bit more than meets the eye. You saw the dance club downstairs, but on the upper floors, it's an office building. I have my own computer operation here. We do a lot of non-public research and development. The bar is sort of a hobby and a cover. How's that? Mikey, you walked into a cyber warfare ops center and started asking questions. Huh? Cyber warfare? Like what? Like terrorist group monitoring, tracing hidden sites and assets, data mining, industrial and sovereign espionage, propaganda, homeland security, infrastructure attacks, intrusion detections, DOS, that's denial of service, and associated countermeasures. That sort of thing. Just the basics, says David with a mischievous grin. This is getting complicated. Explain. There are a lot of naughty people out there, and with the way things are interconnected, the drug war, economic war, or the next world war will probably be fought in cyberspace. We build weapons and defenses for that war. The offices and some of the computer and communication equipment are on the middle floors. From here, we can access and monitor just about any system, network, or database in the world. So what exactly does this involve? Who do you work for? Mainly we have contracts with governments, multinational corporations, and large utilities. This is the main office, but I have other sites around the world. And I thought this was a bar. What are you, the NSA of Omaha? Actually, in a word, yes. Anyone know about this place? We try to keep a low profile, but it's not a well-kept secret in the intelligence community. Is it illegal? Sure, why not? If some aerospace company can make missiles to take out the enemy, why can't we make software to do the same? Do you have any idea how dependent society is on technology right now? Well, sorta, I guess. I doubt it. In the United States alone, there are over 14,000 airports, 20,000 airline flights a day, more than 12,000 miles of coastline, 300 seaports, 7,600 miles of land borders, 2 million people a day, and 2 million rail cars, 11 million trucks, and 6 million shipping containers a year cross the borders. Do you know there are more than 9,000 miles of high-voltage electric transmission lines in New York and New England alone? All computer controlled. Man, there are over 3 million URLs to drive-by malware download sites alone. 10-pixel iframe and you're on the way to Botville. Any idea what would happen if the wrong people got access to the wrong computers? Something bad? Bad indeed. Do you know that a few years ago, the slammer worm got into the Davis-Bessie nuclear power plant and shut down all safety monitoring for 5 hours? That hackers got into the California ISO systems and nearly shut the electricity for 50 million people? So, I should buy more batteries and start wearing lead underpants? Dude, if some terrorist or script kiddie makes one of those nuke toasters go critical, a lead jockstrap won't help. It sounds like you know a lot of bad people, too. Only at a distance. Now get dressed and I'll see you later, says David as he gets up. Well, let's hope all our bad guys keep their distance. You got that right. Let me take a shower. It's been a damn long day and I'll be down in a few minutes. David leaves and walks back to his apartment. Time, 8 p.m. About the same time as Mike visits the club, a battered cell phone chirps an unrecognizable ringtone in a cheap motel room on the outskirts of Omaha. Bob McCarthy picks it up while his friend and partner Tom Schaefer reaches over for the remote and cuts the sound on the TV. Yeah, Pete, no problem, but we can't get out tonight. There's a blizzard. First thing in the morning. Right. We can do that. Yep, no problem. I'll get back to you, and hits end. Bob quickly writes an address on a pad of paper and says, that was Pete. He wants us to go check out something tomorrow. Where is he? Omaha? No, he's in Des Moines. What's up? Why did he call us? I thought Joe pretty much handled things in Omaha. Seems Mike McAnaeus has a problem with the organization, and since Mike worked for Pete, he's Pete's problem, I guess. He doesn't want Joe involved at the moment, says Bob. Mike? So what happened to him? I don't know, but I guess he's on the run or something, and Pete's looking for him real bad. He sounded seriously angry. We're supposed to go check out a lead for thing tomorrow. Mike's credit card was used at a motel near here. Chapter 2. Tuesday, January 9. Time, 8 a.m. Tuesday morning dawns to the rosy luster of the rising light as Tom and Bob dig their car out from the snowdrift that buried it the night before. They manage to free it from the snow after much jockeying back and forth. They jog back to the car and drive off to the address of the motel Pete gave them. Hey, look, isn't that Mike's old car? Says Tom, pointing towards a mound of snow with wheels. Sure looks like it. Check out the plates. Yep, must be. Polk County, Iowa. Let's go see what we can find out from the desk clerk, says Tom as they walk towards the small lobby. When they enter, a bell goes off. Another guy follows them in and waits his turn, browsing through some tourist brochures in a rack near the door. A woman behind the counter stops what she's doing with a pile of papers and turns towards them. Howdy. That's one big load of snow out there, says Tom, as he and Bob stomp the snow from their boots. We're looking for a friend of ours. That looks like his car out there, as he points to Mike's car. He said he'd call us when he got in, but we haven't heard from him. What's his name? Mike McAnaeus. He's from around Des Moines. Yeah, I think he checked in last night. Let me look, says the desk clerk as she fiddles through the computer. I was right. I remember him now. Yep, checked in last evening. Here's his name, Mike McAnaeus, but I don't think he slept here last night. How's that, asks Tom. Well, about 8 o'clock, I was working last night. I sees him go up the street towards that big dance club, Maroon. You know what I'm talking about? Well, I was on until late. My replacement didn't show because of the storm, but I never did see no one come back. Wait a sec, let me check. We didn't have many guests last night, storm and all. She picks up a small two-way GMRS radio. It looks like a cell phone and pages the housekeeper. Hello, Betty. What's up? Say, June, do you know if anyone slept in room 135 last night? I just cleaned there, and no, the bed hadn't been used. Didn't really look like anyone stayed there except for a couple of cigarette butts, some wrappers, and a cheap bottle of wine. Anything wrong? I hope not. Just trying to figure out what happened to the guy who was staying there. Thanks, June, as she clicks off the radio and puts it back in its recharger stand. I guess he didn't come back. I hope he's not in any trouble. Seemed like a nice guy. That was a bad storm last night. But I know the owner of that club. He lets people stay the night when the weather's real bad. He probably stayed there. Right. He's probably okay. We'll check that club up the street, says Bob as he slips her a $50 bill and they leave. The other guy waiting by the door asks directions for a downtown theater and leaves a minute later. Tom and Bob hike up the snow-packed street to the club the desk clerk pointed out. The wind is howling from the north and kicking up plumes of loose snow. Looks like it's closed, says Bob. Wait. Here's a sign. Yeah. It won't be open until 6 p.m. tonight. I don't see any signs of life, says Tom. Let's get back to the car and phone Pete. They trudge back down the street. Bob phones Pete and says, we found his car at that motel. He left early in the evening and probably went to a dance club about 2 blocks away. The maid said his bed wasn't slept in. We went up to the dance club. It's closed. Won't be open until 6 tonight. The desk clerk said the owner lets the crowd sleep over when there's a bad storm. Tom pokes him and points at the motel parking lot. Shit, says Bob. Wait a minute. While we were up checking out that dance club, his car's been moved. It's not in the parking lot. up now. Go back to the motel and find out what you can. See if he checked out. Call me right back, says Pete. Tom and Bob go back to the reception lobby. Say, did you see what happened to Mike's car? Oh, yeah, one of your friends came back and checked him out. My friends? Well, I thought so. There were two of them. One of them was here with you about 15 minutes ago. He was over there looking through the brochures. Wasn't he with you? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that guy. I didn't remember he came in here. Thanks. That explains it. Thanks again. We'll catch up with them. Back in the car, Bob phones Pete again. There were two other guys here. One of them was in the lobby when I was there questioning the desk clerk. I didn't notice him. He was behind me. The desk clerk thought we were together. Anyway, he came back while Tom and I went up to the dance club. He cleared out Mike's room and turned in his key card. Then he's in Omaha, and he's got someone helping him. Okay, now, get over to Joe's warehouse. I'm going to fax a picture of Mike there. I want you two to go to that club when it opens and find out everything you can. Show the picture around. Show it to the waitresses, bartenders, whoever. See if anyone saw something. That clear? Yep, no problem. Call me back as soon as you have anything. Click. Bob says, could you hear that? Yep, let's get to the warehouse and make sure we get paid for that cash you gave the desk clerk.